the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, this is a must-listen podcast. They all are, but my man, Seth Greenberg, is running hot. What you running hot on, big boy?
All right, I have a couple things. I'm running hot on football coaches. I don't understand football coaches. All right, here's first and foremost. I mean, this is ridiculous, all right? So you're Tennessee, you know, you get whacked by Kentucky. All right, now I thought football coaches, first of all, it's the ultimate team sport. And I always thought head football coaches coach their assistant coaches. So basically, you know, their responsibility was to bring the best out of their assistant coaches, put their assistant coaches in positions to play to their strengths, do all those things. So, and they're also responsible for hiring their coaches. It's not like someone else is hiring a coach for you. So if you just hired a coach 7 months ago, like a Tennessee, all right, I don't know Jeremy Pruitt. He might be a great guy. And I don't know what happened between Jeremy Pruitt and his defensive coordinator. They get absolutely whacked by Kentucky. Absolutely whacked. So what does he do? He fires his defensive coordinator 7 months into a two-year contract. Now, unless there's something going on, to me, that is just absolutely like, take a little responsibility. And then you got my guy, Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen in Florida. All right? Dan Mullen. Like, here's the deal, football coaches. Coach your damn teams. You're not doctors. You're not scientists. All right? You have one thing to do. Coach your coaches and coach your teams. All right? You're not Dr. Fauci. You don't decide how many people are going to be in this swamp. So you know what? Control what you can control. I'm so tired of, like, these football coaches are almost comical. Like, it started in April, and they continue to do things like, you're not the king of the castle, man. Like, do what you do. If you're a great football coach, coach your football team. But also, if you're a great football coach, then you should be doing a better job of coaching your coaches. And then my last thing comes to the NFL. A week ago, Tom Brady, all right, he couldn't even count to four. I mean, like, he was the worst. This week, they win. They beat my man Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. First of all, Aaron Rodgers, he's going to have another finger of scotch. Shut up, all right? Enough with that. Don't be such a big shot, all right? Just say we lost, and you know what? I'm going to have another finger of scotch. I mean, give me a break. Here's the deal. And now we got people talking about, well, you know, the team to beat is it's the Buccaneers. This, like, overreaction stuff. I mean, come on. I've had it. I'm done. I'm out. Drop the mic.
I am with you totally on football coaches. My thing with football coaches is this, and you've seen this. They get up there and they talk about the military and molding men. All the while, their assistants are on the phone with a 17-year-old trying to flip his commitment from Penn State to your school or from whatever. So I'm totally with you. Dan Mullen, and I'm not making light of this, but it is interesting that Dan Mullen ended up with COVID when he wanted everybody to pack the swamp, and he ends up getting it. I'm a Dan Mullen fan, and I like his wife too, but I thought that was interesting. Seth, you're so right, and I am a Lula. Bag it. I'm all in on your taking the NFL. You know why? Because I am that guy. Phillip Rivers couldn't throw a ball past his nose 2 weeks ago. This week, he's the greatest quarterback ever. That's right, buddy. Noon to 3 on 1070 in Indy. I am overreaction Monday guy. And probably Tuesday, too. So I understand what you're saying. Let me ask
you. So is Phillip Rivers back? I mean, is he?
Oh, yeah, he's back.
He's good. All right, good. Let's check.
Let me ask you about basketball coaches. What's the biggest difference between basketball and football coaches in the regards that you were talking about with assistant coaches and stuff? What's the biggest difference?
I can't remember a guy that's ever fired a guy in the middle of a season, basketball coach, ever. Absolutely ever. No. So that's number one. Number two is, I think our basketball coaches have been kind of reserved, kind of, you know, basically, even though they have stuff to complain about, I'm sure, they haven't done it publicly. They've been better teammates on their campuses, it seems, publicly across the board. Like, even we've got a situation right now, the Ivy League, there's a good chance the Ivy League's not going to play. All right? Right. You're impacted by that with your stepdaughter. All right. But you won't hear the Ivy League coaches talk out against it. They understand a position and their place. Now, I think it's going to actually kill Ivy League athletics, but they're not worried about it. They got $30 billion endowments. So it's not like to me, if you're an Ivy League school and you're not playing football, you're saving $2 million because you're not making any money. You're saving $2 million. So they're not worried about the financial side, like say in the Power Fives or the elite schools. They're basically, but you see Paul Atkinson, a kid from Yale, player of the year last year in the Ivy League, you know, he put his name in a portal. I think it's going to be harder. The great steps that the Ivy League took in terms of recruiting and basketball, the stuff that Tommy Amaker's been able to do, the stuff that James Jones has been able to do, the stuff that all the different coaches in the league have been able to do. I think it's going to be set back because, it, you know, let's face it, it sends a clear message. You want an Ivy League education, that's awesome. But if basketball is important to you or your sport is important to you, it's only important to an extent within the confines of the Ivy League. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think the basketball coaches have been much more patient and are much, much more respectful of everything that's gone on and aren't sitting on the top of the mountain. Like you haven't heard Kay or Cal or Self, or you think about the elite coaches, none of them have taken a swing at protocol or what. So they've all been very respectful. Wear your mask, practice social distancing. Let me ask you another question. If it wasn't Nick Saban, it was another guy, do you think he would have coached Saturday?
Oh man, that's a fantastic question. I don't know. Here's what I've said, and you know, let me address the coaches thing first, Seth. You know what I think? I think basketball coaches got directly impacted by it, so they have more respect for it. Meaning, you know, conference tournaments, seasons were canceled last spring or last winter, whatever you want to say. And they know it's real. Football coaches didn't deal with that. They're spring football.
Spring game. Practice.
Yeah. And so they, you know, they have a little bit of a different take. But I would also think that there is a little bit of what you said, which is that we're at the top of the mound here. Pay attention to me. You know, we're more important than maybe we are. You know, we think we're more important than maybe we are. You know, the NFL, this is something that I'm not sure about, Seth. The NFL initially came out and said there were 77 positive tests. This is going back. Then they came back and said there were 77. Those 77, everyone was a false positive. Colts just came out. They had four guys. They were going to cancel their game last weekend. Turns out those were false positives. So yeah. I've said, you know, of the 81 tests that I've paid attention to, they've all been false positive. So, Seth, I know this is blasphemy, and somehow this gets political. I don't understand how. I'm not sure what to believe. You know, I'm not sure what to believe. I don't know. When I hear somebody positive, at least now I say, I wonder if that's false positive. And that ended up happening with Saban. The one thing about Saban, and you've talked about this, Seth, they have more resources to test more often.
Yeah, every day.
The Big Ten, and Gene Smith just said this yesterday, they have a protocol in place for not only their own players, but for opponents, meaning Indiana or, Ohio State's going to play Elon. Well, Elon, they're going to make sure at Ohio State that Elon's been tested, including when Elon gets to the game, wherever that is. So you've been saying that the whole time, Seth. But again, in terms of Saban, I don't know what to believe.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. The antigen testing is not as accurate. And they are having some false positives. That's just the way it is. Now, I mean, they had a protocol in place. If you have a positive test, if you're clear 3-day consecutive days in the same protocol, then, you know, obviously you didn't have the virus. So let's put it this way. I mean, him being on the sidelines was a little bit of a help. I mean, his presence is ridiculous. Oh. And I really believe, and I've been really impressed with, like, you know, when you talk about football court. Now, I've been really impressed with Saban because, you know, every picture you see of him, you see him in a mask coaching his team.
Right.
In fact, he's got the double mask on. He's got the mask and then he's got the gator on top of it, it seems. Even after the game, he said, look, I take this thing totally seriously. He said, like, you know, we've got to continue to fight this thing. We got to wear masks. We've got to practice social distancing. We've got to wash our hands. I mean, his messaging has been really good. I haven't seen the same type of messaging across the board. And I haven't seen the same type of messaging in terms of guys wear their masks, they wear them down their neck. Like if that's the deal, that can really say, like, I don't understand if that can really help. And even if we think it can help, but maybe it can't, but if you think, why wouldn't we just do what's in your best interest? So That's that. I think, you know, the Ivy League thing is a really interesting thing to me, though. At best, they're going to have another boat they can start, because it, like, if they bring basketball back, they got to bring badminton back. They got to bring squash back. They got to bring, so I mean, and you know, I'm not sure they want to put that many athletes at risk. If I spoke to one guy, he's only got six guys on campus. He's got guys opting out of the first semester because, you know, in the Ivy, if you attend and that's year goes by, then you lose the year. The other thing is, what do you think of the new rule where this winter season doesn't count? So in other words, if you're a senior, you basically get two senior years. What will the NCAA do? I think they're going to scholarship average, where you're going to have, say, you know, right now you've got, I think you've got 52 scholarships over 4 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Four times 13.
Yeah. So what you've got to do is now, I think they're going to give you 55 or 57 over 4 years, and you've got to average that out at the end of those 4 years you could have more guys on scholarship 1 year. Or what about the guy that says, you know what, I committed to that school, but that guy in front of me is coming back. I thought he was graduating. I mean, how much of a free for all will that be in recruiting?
That's. Or how about players think coaches like them? Like, you're happy to get rid of some of these guys. Like, I don't have to coach this guy again. Now all of a sudden you got to coach this guy again. I don't know if I like that. I am
the number of grad transfers.
Right, I'm one of those that says, hey, if you know. The world is different now, but if I got recruited to a school and I knew, you know, the guy ahead of me was going to be gone my sophomore year, that'd be great. You know, I can handle that. I mean, hell, you go to a big time school, unless you're Zion Williamson or someone like that at Kentucky or Duke, you know, you're probably going to sit for a minute. But if all of a sudden that guy's coming back, then I got to think about whether or not the school is worth it for me to go. I don't want to sit another year. So, Seth, I think it's well-intended. As most things are, I think it's well-intended, but I think there's a lot of issues. But you know what? I say this all the time. Coaches are paid a lot of money to figure out these issues. Coaches are paid a hell of a lot of money not to have every year go 25-0. I mean, they're paid to figure it out when things get a little dicey. And right now, you're going to have to move on the fly. You're going to have to be flexible, and you're going to have a good staff with good ideas. And, you know, good for the NCAA for doing that. I mean, that's fine. Great, I suppose, but it does raise a ton of questions. I mean, there's absolutely no question about it. And I don't think any of us have any of those answers because, frankly, it's going to be school by school. You know,
there's going to be a record number of grad transfers in MAC.
How many schools do you think use all 13 scholarships by percentage? You think 50% or more?
I think the upper level, the Power Fives, no. I think the Power Fives probably 50%. I think the lower levels where you're redshirting guy and you're developing players, I think you use all 13.
Yeah, I do. Because you're always looking for someone, you know.
Yeah, looking like you got an if. You got a couple of ifs out there.
Yeah, so you're like you hold one back and then a grad transfer from bigger school available. So I agree. The thing that I would say about most of this is it really hurts the mid-majors.
Oh, kills it.
Everything is
college. Mid majors become junior colleges.
Yeah, and Seth, the upper echelon school, which they are already. I mean, they're going to be fine. But boy, oh boy, when you talk about scheduling, when you talk about trying to make the NCAA tournament in this, and this may have ramifications for a few years. Who knows? And then you talk about kids leaving, and grad transfers, as you said. This is really an impactful time on mid-major basketball, very much so. And no, you have to be smart as a coach to figure this one out.
I'll tell you who doesn't have a mid-major team, and that's Scott Drew. And I tell you, he doesn't have a mid-major schedule either. And we're going to be welcoming in Scott Drew to kind of talk about dealing with his team. He's got his dudes back. He's got the deepest and best backcourt in college basketball. And I'll tell you what, they're shying away from playing no one. They're going with the old anyone, anywhere, anytime philosophy of Stu Aberdeen. How's that segue there, Taylor? All right. We are excited to welcome in the head coach of the Baylor Bears, Scott Drew. Now, Scott, we talked yesterday for a little bit. I got to ask you something. You must have a 400-year contract. Because I'm looking at your schedule. Can you explain to the people who you are playing to start the season? Because it's insane.
Well, you know, I like to listen to the experts, and I know you and Dan think that we need good games to start the season. So I followed your instructions and advice, and so here's what I do know. Andy Katz came out with his preseason list of four number one seeds for the NCAA tournament, and it was Baylor, it was Illinois, Villanova, and Gonzaga, and in the first five games we play, we might play all three number one seeds. So right now there's a couple brackets that haven't been put out yet, but we'll open up the season in the Mohegan Sun, and Arizona State, Villanova, and BC are up there, and hopefully this week or next week we'll find out who we play in the times. And then from there we go to Seton Hall for the Big East Challenge, and then we go to Orlando, and then it should come out soon, but there's a chance it will be Illinois. And then we go to Indianapolis, and then we play Gonzaga there. So after those first five games, I think I'm going to hang out with you guys for a while.
Wow.
I want to talk about Indianapolis. I was talking to the Sports Corp people. Now, that's going to be a game you're going to play. You're going to play right here, and you're not going to have any fans, right? I mean, that's kind of where you're at.
Well, with the fan part, I'm not 100% sure yet, but I did my part, and that is schedule the game. So I'll let the experts decide the testing and the fans and all of that stuff. I just know that that's a great game, and it's a great way for CBS to kick off the road to the Final Four, starting in Indy and ending in Indy. And hopefully, like 353 other schools, we all want to be there at the end.
Are you concerned? I mean, like, I'm looking at you guys are traveling. You're playing in different major events. What is the university, or what is the league, or what are your concerns, or what are the protocols they're going to have in place for you guys as you travel from Mohegan to Orlando to Indy over probably about a 14-day period, somewhere in that?
Well, close to 14 days. So to begin with, the Big 12 has their policies and protocol. And then the good thing about these events, they're going to basically be mini pods or bubbles and should be secure areas with the testing procedures that the NCAA and the leagues all feel good with. So with travel, the blessing of being at Baylor University and one of the Power Five schools is you charter. So hopefully not going to airports will help us. But at the end of the day, I know we're excited to play basketball and have an opportunity to play. And this is one of those seasons more than ever. I think quality games are so important for the players we have, because you don't know how many games you will be able to play. And then at the same time, for all college fans, I know that's what they love. For great games.
Hey, Coach, fans ask me this all the time, and I don't know the answer. You know, you have a normal schedule, and it says, okay, Baylor's playing Gonzaga at 12 o'clock on whatever day it is, and then Tuesday, and they're going to play so-and-so and this network and at this time. Do you know networks? Do you know when, where, that kind of, I mean, you know where, but do you know when and times and how Baylor fans can see the games, that kind of stuff yet?
We don't, because we don't know the times yet. Once we do, everyone with social media finds out at the same time. And then, as you know, things change. I mean, right now they might not plan on fans, and then in a month from now we might have fans, and the percentages depending on the virus and the treatments, and obviously when you get the vaccine, then hopefully that's a game changer. But right now. Normally, as you two know, you mess with scheduling before. You want to get it done. You want to know who you're playing, when you're playing, and put it behind you. We're on like schedule number 18 right now, and I know the networks are like on schedule number 100. So everybody will be really excited when everything's done. We just had a Big 12 conference call, and I think there's only one team that actually has their schedule finalized.
Will you play anyone else besides those crazy games that you've already scheduled?
Well, I mean, we do have the SEC challenge, and then we will have a couple of guarantee games at home.
So you're going to play a full you'll play full 27 if they allow.
Yeah, we're playing the Lakers, and then we're playing the Spurs. Well, and you know what? You know, this is a great one for fans out there, because everybody says these are great games. Why don't you play all your games like this? And I'm not going to give the answer. I'm just going to ask you two, why you wouldn't play all your games like this, just so fans understand the flip side of it also with the other things that go into managing a team. So why wouldn't you play 13 games or 12 games or 10 games all like this, which are top 25 teams potentially?
Because my gums would be bleeding and I'd be a chain smoker. I mean, like, you got to have a couple games just for people out there that when you go to the lab and you can work on some things, and that, you know, like Coach Holland used to have a great thing. You know, first few games of the season when I was at Virginia with him, you know, he said, all right, we just need to go out and we need to play hard and we need to play together. We literally didn't raise his voice. His pregame talk was 2 minutes. I walked away at the end of it. I said, Coach, that was an interesting pregame talk. He goes, some games you just got to go out and win. And they've got, it's on them to just go out and be ready to play and win. And it's my job to just sit back and look and see how they respond. And I thought it was really interesting. I think, you know, as a coach, you need a couple of those games. You can't beat your guys up. There's only so many times you can get your team up to a certain level, championship level. And I think you need some games where you're going to play against your potential, but that you just going to go out and win. Wouldn't you agree with that, Dan?
I never won enough. That's why I'm sitting here. And at Bowling Green, we're happy to win a game. But yeah, I mean, look, Coach, I like what you're doing, man. Look, let's think about the whole of college basketball. College basketball gets a little bit swallowed up by football, but not when there's great games. You know, not when there's two great teams playing against each other. And I applaud you for doing it. I applaud you for playing all these. You know, I wish every rivalry that could be possibly a non-conference rival would automatically play just to enhance college hoops, Scott. I applaud you for playing all these games and getting out in front, I guess, is what I would say, as opposed to playing catch up.
What's a typical day now in the world of Scott Drew compared to how it would be like, say, last year at this time?
Well, I can tell you it's something completely different than I've ever felt. Turn 50 here at the end of the week, so birthday's coming up. And in coaching, you know, normally when school starts in September, you're just swamped from the standpoint going to practice, and then the days that are off, you're going to do home visits, and then on the weekends you got official visits. And really for the first time in my lifetime, because I've always been in coaching, right now the weekends you're off. And you're not on the road recruiting, so you're with your players, and it is really a different feeling to be able to focus completely on your own team day in and day out and see them rather than being gone every other day or spending so much time with recruits on the weekends. And then for family life, obviously, I've been to more of my kids' games than so far this year than I have in all the years combined. So definitely different from that standpoint, a blessing to be able to focus on family and your team, though, that's for sure.
Coach, I do want to talk about, my stepdaughter's here. She goes to Harvard. She's not in school, softball player. And, you know, she's a great athlete, but not able to play right now. How's the mental health of kids? I mean, they got to be energized when they see that you're out there busting it to get a good schedule. But throughout this whole thing, how concerned are you about kids' mental health?
Well, first of all, how about your IQ? Your kid's going to Michigan and Harvard. That's impressive, yeah. Dan. They got your genes.
I'm the only step parent that has genetically influenced the intelligence.
You're getting an evil eye right now.
Not having that. She's sitting over here. She's not having none of that.
I can tell you that in recent time, you just look in the last 10 years, how far science has come with mental health and just how important that is for all programs to make sure that they're taking care of their players, because it is a real issue, and it is something that mentally, if kids aren't right, they're not able to function, perform like they're capable of. And definitely the stresses from COVID, racial tension, from social injustice movements, to uncertainty of seasons and everything. I mean, you throw all that in, kids nowadays, if you're not watching out and making sure they're doing all right mentally, it's a slippery slope. And thank goodness schools have gotten so much better with hiring personnel to help their student athletes, because definitely that's an area that needs attention.
All right, your team playing this crazed schedule. Can you remember a team that has, first of all, what a great job getting them all back, excluding Freddie Gillespie, obviously. Mm-hmm. Freddie. But I mean, when you get Jared Butler back and you get your backcourt, Maceo Teague, and all those guys say, you know, coach, I'm pulling my name out, I'm coming back. And then when you have guys sitting out that can have an impact, and you've got, you know, hopefully a healthier Tristan Clark. I mean, like, tell me about your team. I was a big Freddie Gillespie fan, but I'm a huge Mark Bonner fan. Tell me, where is your team right now with all these guys returning? Obviously a huge advantage.
I can tell you this first and foremost, when this summer ended and players were able to return to campus, it was amazing when the gyms opened for the first time, how excited the student athletes were to be in the facilities. And I mean, our guys, all of a sudden, from where you're always feeling like you have to be in the gym, you have to be working on your craft, to where now it's a blessing and a privilege and an opportunity to get better each and every day. And so the excitement of that, and then obviously our coaches, because we hadn't been in the gym in a long time with them. So that was a really good transition period. What makes our team successful last year and hopefully this year is we have a bunch of hardworking blue collar mentality, guys that a lot of them were two-star, three-star, no-star guys that just come to work every day and get better, and they want to be coached. They want to improve. Iron sharpens iron, and they like one another. So they spend an enormous amount of time in the gym, and that's especially during a pandemic. You want players that they're in their apartments or their dorm room or the classroom or the gym, and that's it, because as you know, being shut down for 2 weeks in the recipe for success, for sure.
Coach, do you think players and students, do they understand the magnitude of this? Do they think, you know, people are making too much of this pandemic? What's the mentality of a college basketball player with the pandemic? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think athletes always have a chance to really, it's kind of like get the appetizer before the meal, or they get the cliff notes before the book. And that is when they get here in the summertime. And with us, it was delayed and people didn't get here till we were later than most schools, trying to make sure everything was set and our student athletes were going to be safe. But end of July, beginning of August is when we transitioned. And at that point, once somebody did get the virus, or because of contact tracing, once you spend 2 weeks in self-quarantine, it right away brings the reality home to you. So some of our guys have been out over a month and they've never gotten the virus just because they've been with direct contact. So after that happens one time, usually everybody understands the seriousness of it, and they don't want to be stuck in their apartments for two straight weeks and not able to get better at basketball or do things that normal people do. So student athletes usually get that first dose. I think for college students, when they first came back to college campuses, I think there was a larger number of outbreaks because of not understanding the severity. And since that time, most universities, I know our university has done a very good job of educating and keeping the numbers down. And I think universities coming down hard on students with large social functions or parties or whatnot, disciplining those students, send a message that, hey, we're gonna be safe on our college campuses if you want to be here. And I think in a large part that has worked. As you know, the trick, just like in any practice, is it's one day you can focus on the fundamentals, but can you do it for a long sustained periods of time? And we can't grow weary until this fight's over, as we know.
Yeah, to me, it's because your football team got hit pretty bad on that trip to West Virginia. Like, what when that happened, what were your players' reactions to that?
And again, that's what's really tough is when you're trying to do everything right, and then it does spread. Then, as a coach, at least you can understand that the self-inflicted wounds, where you're putting yourself in harm's way, those are the ones that bother you most as a coach. Anytime you're in today's especially when you travel, like you had said earlier, and once one person gets it, and it can spread to several others, but the contact tracing becomes, especially when you're traveling as a team, that can engulf people quickly. But the good news is, I think we're back practicing, and hopefully the rest of the year we can be able to not have any games postponed. But again, if you do everything right, it doesn't guarantee success either. Just like practice, you can prepare for a game. It doesn't mean you're going to execute properly, and that's the unfortunate thing with the pandemic.
Do you? Uh-oh, I lost.
Uh-oh,
did I screw that up?
I thought you were taking a charge or something over there.
I hit buttons, Coach. I hit buttons and things go awry. I just
hey, I hit buttons too, and they do the same. So we're on the same page, Dan.
Crazy. All right, last thing before we let you go, Coach. When you look at your team and you look at the rest of the country and you see transfers and all this kind of stuff, how do you think? You know, giving basically a free winner to players, you know, they can come back. How's that going to impact everybody? What do you see out of that?
Well, I think coaches are going to have to really be flexible from the standpoint. There's so many different things affecting us and our programs in the near future here. Name, image, and likeness, one-time transfer exception, everybody getting an extra year, and being flexible, and there is no book on it. No one's gone through it. No one has experience with it. As you both know, it's hard to keep 13 guys happy. Try 16 or 17. So I think, you definitely understand people getting an extra year. You look at last year not having a chance for the NCAA tournament, and this year definitely a different type of season. Hopefully it's a longer season rather than a shorter season. But that's where coaches are going to have to be flexible. We're going to have to adjust. And at the end of the day, there is nothing for certain. And I think flexibility and trying to help your student athletes is going to be paramount in the next year, because a lot of changes with college basketball.
No doubt. I got to ask you about my favorite player, my man who never saw a shot he didn't like. My man.
So let me guess who? Matt Meyer, huh?
So I got a question. Now, your backcourt is ridiculous. You got Adam Flagler coming in from High Point, who could really score from the Big South. You got a terrific point guard coming in also, LJ Cryer. But my man Matt, all right. What do you have you seen this guy play, Dan? This guy, my man, will get a three shots before he gets to the score table. I mean, it's unbelievable. And the shot, my man has no fear. We're sitting in practice. They're doing time and score. And my man lights one. Instead of running down, lights one up from the hash mark. And he basically
he was
says,
open, though, Dan. He was open.
Scott said something to him. He said, Coach, I was open. Like, how is my man doing? That's what I want to know.
Well, you love his courage, and you love his confidence. At the same time, it's a blessing and curse. You know, in college basketball, it's really, in any basketball level, to be able to create your own shot. Not a lot of people can do it with the athleticism and the great defense you face nowadays. And the blessing is Matt Meyer can create his shot, and he can get it up anytime, anywhere. And with that also comes, we always say your greatest strength can be your biggest weakness. And the fact that you can get up a shot doesn't mean it's the right shot or the best shot. And he's improving with time and score. He's improving with age. And as we all know in coaching, normally it's much better to coach juniors than freshmen. So probably instead of getting up four shots in 30 seconds, we're down to three. So we're pacing ourselves.
Hey, my favorite play. That was my best moment of any practice I went to last year. He was dead ass serious. He was dead ass serious. He said, Coach, I was open. You always tell me if you're open, let it fly. I was open. He said it with such conviction. I said, damn, shoot it again.
Hey, Seth had a lot of fun from where he was sitting letting me deal with that.
Oh, it was great. Because I was thinking about what I would have said. And you were incredibly poised. And I was what the hell?
Well, the good thing is I've had experience because I've heard a lot of those comments over the years with him.
Oh, that was great. Well, hey, man, we appreciate your time and stay healthy. We think what you're doing is so good for our game. It's good for your players, even though we're starting a week or so later, it's going to be great for college basketball. I mean, you've got five games that are as good as any games that we'll see all season, which is awesome.
Well, you two be safe so we can hear you, and thank you for what you guys do. There's a lot of times we play your snippets and thoughts on games to our players because they can learn a lot from listening to you two, so we appreciate you.
Hey, team. This is producer Taylor Schwenk. Before we move on today, I want to remind you that season 2 of the ESPN Investigates podcast is now available. The Running Man tells the story of an obscure former Olympian and alleged serial sexual predator and how a 14-month ESPN investigation brought him out of the shadows. More than 50 men were physically abused and mentally manipulated by their quote-unquote coach for over 40 years until they banded together decades later to find justice. Subscribe and listen to ESPN Investigates wherever you get your podcasts.
It was great. Think about their schedule. Think about their schedule, though, Coach.
You want to go into that right now?
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. I mean, I don't care how good you are. Your first five games, I mean, look who you're playing. I mean, Arizona State, if they play them, brutal. Villanova, absolutely terrific. You know, Gonzaga, tremendous. I mean, they don't have a rocking chair game until they get off that first 10-day swing. I'm just interested, what's your take on being in three different places, Mohegan Sun, Orlando, and then Indianapolis on the road? You think that's a little risky?
Well, I think it's a little risky. I don't blame them for doing it, though. But sure, I mean, I think that let's be honest, anytime a kid walks on campus, at least what we're being told is risky. But yeah, I think so. And I think you've said this all along, and Scott reiterated it. Look, you have charter flights. You're not walking through airports. You're not doing what normal people do. Yeah. And then what's interesting, Seth, I watch football players, and this is fascinating to me. Again, I don't know what's real, what's not. I watch football players literally sweating on each other in the trenches, and then I look on a sideline, and a coach who's not around really anybody other than on a headset is in a mess. So, you know, you got to stay in a hotel, right? I mean, you got to trust your guys that no one's sneaking out or no one's bringing anybody in or, you know, and then of course you got to trust that the hotel staff that's, you know, catering the meals and all that. So yeah. Certainly risky, but you know, there's a part of me, Seth, that says you got to live your life with respect of the virus, but not in fear of it. And I think that's kind of what Scott and some of these coaches are doing. They're respecting it, I'm sure, but they're not fearing it and trying to make things normal. And I think that's good for everybody.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. You know, I think we talk about things that are going to go through during the course of the season. I agree with you there. We haven't talked about the officials and how they're going to pot up the officials. Sure. Because I'll tell you what, those guys that usually work five games in a week and go from town to town to town to town with five different crews, that's over with. And the consortium of officials, you could see one local official, like that's not even a high-rated NCAA official, working every single game once we get into league play. And you might see a consortium of 8 to 10 to 14 officials work one region, and they just stay as a team and rotate through so that, because if you work with a different crew every single day, there's no way you're not going to spread the virus.
Seth, the first person, when the virus first hit, Jason Benetti and I were doing Horizon League, and about, you know, when everything shut down, about 2 weeks later, we learned that one of the officials had the virus. And, yep. You know, so you're right. I mean, that's got to be figured out. You know, that scorers table is usually pretty packed with people. I watched the TBT and the NBA. They limited people. You know, things like coaches, you know, at Indiana and at Bowling Green, I always had a ton of managers because I thought it was a good program and good things. You can't have a ton of managers.
One manager, Michigan State right now.
Yeah, you got to. You can't have a, you know, usually there's a trainer, assistant trainer, maybe some student trainers around the program. You can't have that. So there's going to be a lot of that. But again, I think respecting the virus, not fearing the virus is what Scott Drew's doing. And, you know, hey, we'll see what happens. But man, oh man, I like the fact that he's talking about playing a lot of games because Ed Cooley brought me down last week when he said we're only playing 13 games, Seth. That brought me down.
I'll tell you one thing. The first – we're going to start basketball on 25th. It looks that way at least. That first 2.5, 3 weeks, the number of good games that we are going to have is absolutely going to be incredible. I mean, it really is. I mean, the number of really good games – if you're a basketball fan, you're not competing with anything in the NBA. The only basketball you're going to find is going to be college basketball. And if we do a good job of promoting it, everyone says college basketball has lost its identity. It's lost its sexiness. It's lost its appeal. We have a chance to raise the profile of our game. And I also heard some news the other day that even like the NBA might not come back till February, and then the following year, they're going to slowly work back to their calendar that they might not come back till Christmas. So we have opportunities in college basketball to raise our profile and get people back into really appreciating what our game is. And I the start of the season is just going to be incredible, the number of good games.
I agree, my friend. Great stuff.
And next week, we got Mike Boynton. The coach of Oklahoma State, who has the best player in the country in Cade Cunningham. So that is going to be very interesting. And, you know, how do you deal with that when you basically your team right now is not eligible for the NCAA tournament, but he's took over for Brad Underwood and they went on some NCAA, had an issue with one of their assistant coaches. But I really admire the guy. I think his team's playing hard as hell. And I think he's kind of comes from the Brad Underwood, Frank Martin tree, and I've been really, really impressed with him. So I'm excited to be with
a radio. I think he's great. I think he's absolutely great.
Yeah. So, all right. I know where you're on your way to.
I got to go to work.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.